Now, anytime an emerging disease is in the news, a lot of misinformation comes along with it. And the novel coronavirus is no exception. Online sources, both real and robotic, have been spreading false theories and rumors about the origin of the virus. Dr. Jonathan Tempty joins us now to talk about misinformation about the illness and why it's important to get things right. Dr. Tempty is Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's been active on pandemic influenza and bioterrorism working groups for the state of Wisconsin. His current research interests include viral disease surveillance in primary care, seasonality, and epidemiology of influenza. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to Central Time.
And thank you so much for having me, Rob.
Before we tackle some of the misinformation, let's look at where to get the good stuff. What are our reliable sources if we want to get the real deal?
Well, I think there are two main sources for people who are really interested in this. First, the Centers for Disease Control does a very, very good job of summarizing what we know about this virus. More closer to home, the Wisconsin Division of Public Health at the Department of Health Services has a website that they update every day, I believe, at 2 o'clock, and it provides really good information on what's happening here in Wisconsin.
Now, there's so much out there. NPR did kind of a roundup of some of the bad info they've seen. And let's start with exaggerating the threat and underplaying the threat. Let's start with the exaggerating side. They cited some people making the looking at the death numbers, multiplying by 50 or so, and giving these hugely inflated numbers for the death toll of coronavirus. What is the hazard of doing something like that?
Anytime you overemphasize, it makes people panicked. It drives all sorts of unproductive behavior. For example, right now we're seeing news media reports of shops or stores running out of Clorox, of people buying out all the face masks and so on. And so it makes people much more worried about what is going on than we need to be at this time.
And we've also seen at the other end of things, people saying this is basically just comparable to the common cold. Now, it's not apocalyptic, but it's not common cold either, is it?
And the concern there is then people tend to dismiss it when, in fact, we should be taking this very seriously. What we do know is this is a respiratory virus for which humans don't have any existing immunity. Is brand new into our bodies, and so we don't have any really good defense. And when that happens, you have a virus that can spread very, very quickly. And if you look, we've gone from the first few cases in China probably in early December to a global reach of this virus on almost all continents except Antarctica. So that's really, really fast. But we are still fairly ignorant in terms of what the consequences are going to be.
Let's talk a little more about the consequences. And so this is a fast-spreading virus, we know, and it can be hard to detect, I understand. How about the lethality of the coronavirus as we've seen it so far?
What we're able to go off right now is the number of deaths in people for whom coronavirus was confirmed. Mm-hmm. And then we have the total number of people with confirmed coronavirus. What we don't know is the number of people out there with illness, perhaps fairly mild, that have coronavirus. And when you have limited supplies of testing tools and diagnostic equipment, you're limited in who you choose to test. What that does is it makes the death rate seem higher than it probably is. That being said, this is a virus that a lot of the virological experts out there and people who are involved in public health say this is probably worse than seasonal influenza. It's probably not as bad as the great influenza pandemic 102 years ago, but it's something that we really need to be aware of and treat with respect.
How much of the lethality of a virus like this or the one 100 years ago, the pandemic you were talking about, has to do with the disease, the virus itself? How much of it has to do with our public health system, how we react to it?
Well, I think most of that is due to the lethality of the virus. Respiratory viruses in general are incredibly hard to contain. In 2009, we had this new pandemic of influenza A H1N1. And despite all the efforts, it circled the globe very, very quickly. I oftentimes will equate trying to stop a respiratory virus with trying to stop water with a sieve. It just really flows through populations very, very quickly. There are things you can do to slow it down, and good public health can do that. For example, maintaining social distances, occasionally closing down schools or limiting large gatherings. Sometimes it means changing the way we travel. And all those were imposed pretty rigidly in China. And my guess, it slowed things down, but did not stop it.
Talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the novel coronavirus, clearing up some misinformation that's out there. Dr. Tempty, whenever we have an emerging disease like this, there's often a conspiracy theory that it was weaponized in a lab somewhere. In this case, people are saying China. The evidence people are offering behind that is, well, natural diseases don't spread this quickly. That is rubbish, I imagine.
Yeah, natural diseases can actually spread this quickly. We don't have to look any further back than 2 or 3 years ago with the Zika virus when it arrived in Brazil and then exploded through the Caribbean. And we went from no cases to very widespread where the conditions were correct in a matter of months. So that is something we see over and over again. And it has much more to do with how contagious the virus is and some of the characteristics of that virus itself. But with this particular one, we don't have that backstop or that slowing down process that's imposed by having some immunity. And these can really take off like wildfire.
Another concern that comes up with this is, can we get a vaccine? Can we have a cure? We've heard even from the president saying we could have a vaccine within months, not a year, year and a half. What do we know about the pace of a vaccine development, if it's even possible to do that?
Well, vaccines are able to be developed fairly quickly these days. And we'll give the Chinese government the credit for very rapidly fully sequencing or basically dissecting out the entire genome of this virus and sharing it across the world. A vaccine can be developed quickly, but the difficult part is then testing it for two important components. One is it safe in people? And number two, is it effective? And without it being both safe and effective, a vaccine doesn't go very far. And so coming up with the constituent parts can be relatively quick, but the rest of it takes a while. And so I would think we're looking more at, again, as the experts in vaccine development are saying, about 18 months.
Now, let's talk about bad information about remedies. I've seen people already selling things that they say are going to cure the disease caused by this coronavirus. People have recommended covering yourself in sesame oil, which I imagine isn't going to be a big help. And even there's been a claim that ingesting a particular dangerous substance can kill the coronavirus. What do you make of this kind of misinformation, these false claims of cures?
Well, again, we don't have any scientific evidence for any of these. There have been some medications used in the class called antivirals previously for SARS. And there are some ongoing trials of these medications right now to see if there is any efficacy and also if it's a safe medication to be using. But as far as other things out there, we don't really have any interventions medically other than good supportive care.
For people listening worried about this, so what kind of personal hygiene, personal care can we do when we're thinking about coronavirus or when we're thinking about a flu season?
Well, this applies to virtually all the respiratory viruses, from influenza to coronavirus to the common cold rhinovirus. These are all spread through respiratory secretion. So coughing or sneezing will project literally millions of viral particles out there. And by sitting close or being close to somebody who's coughing or sneezing puts you within the cloud of these viral particles that you can breathe in and they can infect you. Coughing or sneezing onto a surface and then touching that surface and wiping your nose or your eye can transmit the virus as well. So the things that we always talk about are really common sense. Number one, maintaining some distance away from people who are coughing and sneezing. Number two, good hand washing repeatedly. And soap and water works just fine for this virus, but you have to do it long enough. About 20 minutes or 20 seconds is what we're recommending, not 20 minutes, but 20 seconds of hand washing, and do that repeatedly throughout the day. Those are things that can help. We don't know if a face mask will protect you, but face masks are very good for people who are actively coughing or sneezing because it catches that movement of air and deflects it to the side and behind, and also catches some of the droplets. So those are the things that we would recommend.
What's the message for people if they think they might have it? We don't want to overwhelm the healthcare system with people who don't have a threatening flu or novel coronavirus. But who should be thinking if they see the signs of it, yeah, I should probably get checked out?
Well, I think at this point in time, what we know is this is a virus that can cause anything from a very mild respiratory infection, like a sore throat, a runny nose, all the way up to severe shortness of breath. And given that we have limited resources, and at this time in Wisconsin, we have had only one case that has been confirmed, one would say that in Wisconsin, we don't have much going on right now. This is where it's important to pay attention to credible sources, and I'm going to pick on the Department of Health Services, Division of Public Health right now, because they're the best source of Wisconsin data. And paying attention there, and if we start seeing more cases here, then there should be advice saying who should come in and who shouldn't. And this is going to probably be very much like influenza. If people are having a mild illness, no shortness of breath, not terribly high fever, they can shelter at home, be isolated from others, and they'll get through. People who have underlying medical conditions are probably at more risk. As we've seen, most of the cases out there, most of the hospitalizations and most of the deaths have been in people over the age of 40 or 50 years old, and almost all of them have some underlying medical condition.
Dr. Tempty, thanks a lot for joining us today.
And thank you very much.
That's Dr. Jonathan Tempty, Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement for the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We talked to him today about identifying and beating misinformation about the coronavirus disease, COVID-19.